athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
You're locked into the dopest show on radio. From the press box to press row, I am your host, Donald Ware. We are jam-packed on the program today. As a matter of fact, joining us in this segment, 2018 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series champion Joey Logano going to join us on the program. Also joining us today here on From the Press Box to Press Row, model Danielle Harrington. She was on the cover of Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition on last year. If you don't know her, I invite you to check her out. Danielle Harrington becoming just the third black woman to grace the cover behind Tyra Banks and Beyonce. Danielle Harrington going to join us on the program. Some more NASCAR, as Bubba Wallace also going to join us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. He drives the number 43 for Richard Petty Racing. And a little Final Four talk. We got the glove. Naismith Hall of Famer Gary Payton also going to join us today here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Hit us up via Twitter at Box to Row, BOXTOROW, or on Facebook, BOX, the number 2ROW. Also on Instagram, BOXTOROW. Glad you've joined us today as we're jam-packed here on the program. Let's continue here on From the Press Box to Press Row. NASCAR is in full effect, and we're joined by the 2018 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series champion. He drives the number 22 for Penske Racing, and the race taking place in Bristol, Tennessee on Sunday. Joey Logano joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Joey, welcome to the program.
What's happening? You doing all right today?
I'm doing great, Joey. I appreciate the time. I want to start here. I want to get your thoughts on winning last year's Cup Series championship and what that meant to you.
Yeah, that one's hard to put into words. You know, you focus, for me, my whole life on one goal, to be a NASCAR champion. And you keep working at it, and you go through the ups and the downs, and you ride that roller coaster ride, and to finally reach that achievement was an incredible feeling. One of the coolest parts is it was, for everyone on a 22 team, it was their first championship, and some have been on the road for longer than I've been alive. So to be able to, help deliver that with the team, that was a special feeling. But that was last year. We gotta keep looking out the windshield, and you get to Daytona earlier this year, it's all washed out back to zero. So we got to keep focusing on getting back to that same spot again.
No, I think it's a great point. I think it's a fair point, especially when you're talking about and with respect to last year. But I want to, you're 28 years old. You're young. You got a lot of guys that have been doing this for a very long time that haven't won a championship as of yet. And you're a veteran at 28. This is your 12th year on the main circuit. Does it feel like it's been 12 years?
No, it doesn't feel like it, but I've been around a little bit, I guess. It's one of the advantages of starting really young is that you're able to have the experience you need to be able to go out there and be successful in our sport, but still have the youth to be able to do it a long time. So, the road to the top got pretty rocky at times, and definitely probably because I was inexperienced, I wasn't quite ready, but I feel like the reward is happening right now as I have the experience to go out there and be successful. So it's starting to work out all right now.
And don't forget, folks, the race can be seen on FS1 on Sunday. And I want to get your thoughts, Joey, because the season is still relatively young, and you sit at the number four position right now. I want to get your thoughts on 2019 to this point.
Yeah, you know, I feel like we've had some cars that can win a lot of races, and we really capitalized on one in Las Vegas. And, you know, I feel like there's a, you know, Atlanta, we were really fast leading the race and had a loose wheel. Yesterday we had a really fast car. We won a stage in Texas, and, you know, the hood strut, came apart and we had to repair our car and went down a lap and couldn't recover from it in time, to get back up front. So, you know, I guess when you think about, the speed in our car has been there, some of the execution pieces have been, you know, kind of a struggle right now. So we got to clean that stuff up. And the good thing is that's a little bit easier to clean up than it is just trying to find speed in the car. So if we can maintain the speed and keep working on, you know, trying to clean up our little mistakes here and there, whether it's the driver or whatever, we need to keep cleaning those up so we're in that championship mode when it becomes time.
That is the voice of Joey Logano. He drives the number 22 for Penske Racing. He is the 2018 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series champion. He joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. And Joey, you know, I was at Daytona, and it, you know, Daytona, the 500 this year was so crazy. Like, you had a bunch of wrecks. Of course, you had the wreck with about 9 or 10 laps remaining or so. But I want to get your thoughts on the Daytona 500 this year. You finished number four.
Yeah, it's always a crazy race when you go to Daytona for the 500. You know, everyone realizes what it's all about. You know, it's the biggest race of the year, and it's all about winning. It's not about finishing second or third, or, you know, or having a nice point day. It's about winning the race. And I think that's what maybe draws some of the wrecks and the cautions that you see in that race a lot of times, is that everyone is so aggressive trying to make these big moves, and we kind of wad them up. But you know, that's part of NASCAR racing, man. It's awesome. It's all right. As long as you can get through it every now and again and get a good finish at night.
Man, it really is awesome, and that was really an awesome race. So, you know, you've had some success at Bristol. You've won a couple of times there. You've had multiple top five finishes. When I kind of looked at you raced twice at Bristol, so I kind of looked at the first time around over any given year when you've raced the first time around, maybe not as much success, and then the second time around, you ultimately have had a lot of success. What is it about Bristol the second time around that enables you to have that success, and what do you have to do on Sunday to be successful at Bristol?
Yeah, well, I know the spring race usually we have some kind of issue we fight through, whether it's a crash or mechanical issue. It seems like this happened a few times, and we're really hoping it's not this time. Our cars have been fast, whether it's a spring race or a fall race. But yeah, I just really love Bristol. You know, it's just a really cool racetrack, great environment for the race fans. You know, and really fun for the drivers, where you have such a high bank, fast half mile, short track, close racing. You know, it's one of those racetracks that you wish there was more of. You know, you wish you could go there more often, because it's a fun, grueling race. That, you know, it's physically demanding as anywhere we go, and mentally challenging. You don't have a break, you know, throughout those 500 laps. It's tough. And that's what makes winning at Bristol so special.
NASCAR driver Joey Logano drives the number 22. For Penske Racing, he joins us here on the program. And for you, Joey, you've had a lot of success in throughout the course of your career, and everything that you've been able to do has led you to the point last year where you were able to win it all. But let me take you back a little bit. What did it mean to you to win the Rookie of the Year going back all the way to 2009? And obviously, that's just part of the journey to get you to have gotten to you to where you are now.
Yeah, rookie year is always special, but, you know, I think it's a nice, you know, award to achieve because you only have 1 year to get it, but it doesn't mean it's where you want to be. You know, if you can win rookie of the year and still finish 20th every race, that's not quite where you want to be. So it's nice to be able to achieve that accomplishment, but by no means that was not even close to the goals I had set in my mind for that year, so... it's kind of bittersweet in a weird way.
Yeah. How did you get the nickname Sliced Bread?
You know those nicknames you have when you're a kid, and then they kind of just go away as you get older? That was one of those for me, but it just never went away. it's a joke between me and my friends, and we all had stupid nicknames like that. That one stuck.
Like, I didn't know that. Like, I'm not trying to reignite it or anything. It sounds like, you know, maybe something you're trying to get rid of.
At this point, I just go with it. Whatever you want to call me, I'm fine with it. I've been called much worse. So, every weekend, so I'm all right with it.
Yeah. Last couple of thoughts, Joey. We appreciate the time. Congratulations. You have a son that was born last year, Hudson, who's now one. Can you speak to how you're able to balance both family time and, of course, being on the track?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. You know, your life changes so much, you know, when you become a father and you have a family, you know, take care of you. You want to be a great race car driver. You want to be a great dad. And, you know, trying to do both sometimes is really hard. And it's the same for anybody, right? Anybody that you're trying to provide for their family. And sometimes providing for your family is being a good dad. You know, I just have to try to understand that some days. And, you know, it's tough. You know, I try to put things in different departments, right? And when I get home, shut off my phone and just, you know, focus in on being a dad. And when I go to work, I focus on going to work. So, you know, the time restraints on, you know, not just the driver's schedules, but pretty much everyone in NASCAR with the amount of traveling we have it's a challenging position for everybody on the race team. So, you know, it's something everyone kind of figures out how to do it. Mama Bear has become pretty tough to be able to do a lot of things. So it's all about the support group that really helps there.
Sort of in a similar vein, you know, you seem like you really enjoy doing these type of interviews. Do you?
I enjoy it. Yeah, I have a good time with it. Yeah, I choose just to be happy. You know, sometimes, you know, when I'm in a stressful situation in the race car or working on my race car, that's a work moment. But I think just doing these interviews is a lot of times it's just something to have fun with and enjoy and have a good time. And plus, you're the first one of about 10 interviews I got to do. So you got fresh Joey, not wore out Joey. Yet, so.
All right. Well, we look forward to seeing fresh Joey as the Motor City 500 going to be taking place at Bristol Motor Speedway on Sunday. Of course, you can catch the action on FS1 as Joey Logano, the 2018 Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series champion, joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Joey, we appreciate the time. Good luck to you and your team on Sunday and throughout the course of the race season.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
You too, Joey. Bubba Wallace is up next.
Mommy, where are we going?
To the grocery store, honey.
Oh, goody, Mommy. Can we buy an original bag of Marjorie's beef jerky?
Of what?
An original bag of Marjorie's beef jerky. It's really good, Mommy. Dad let me try some, and I couldn't help myself, and I ate it all, and I was hoping that you could, like, help me replace it before he comes home from work.
Why would you eat all of Dad's beef jerky?
Mommy, I couldn't help myself. Marjorie's beef jerky is so good, and Daddy says it's good for you.
Well, it sounds like we had better buy two bags to avoid this from happening again.
Thanks, Mom.
Marjorie's beef jerky, the best beef jerky on the planet.
You can also purchase Marjorie's beef jerky online at marjoriesbeefjerky.com. That's marjoriesbeefjerky.com or call them toll free 844-340-7613. Marjorie's beef jerky, the best beef jerky on the planet.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Let's continue here on From the Press Box to Press Row. We're going to continue the NASCAR talk as, of course, the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series in full effect going to take place on Sunday at the Bristol Motor Speedway, the Ford City 500, 2 p.m. Eastern on FS1. And on the line, the gentleman, Josh, the number 43 for Richard Petty Racing. He is Bubba Wallace, joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Bubba, welcome back to the program.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Doing good, man. I had a chance to see you at the at the Daytona 500. I want to get your thoughts. You finished second in that race on last year. I want to get your thoughts. You got caught up in a wreck early on and still tried to continue on, man, but it just wasn't happening for you that day.
Yeah, it's part of it. You know, you don't know how those races are going to go and how they're going to pan out, and it's always tough to kind of keep your mental toughness strong. I mean, it's you get taken out early like that, and you have to ride around the rest of the race because you're banking on other cars wrecking out and being done, so you can kind of gain laps on them. But all in all, it's just an unfortunate day for us, but that's part of speedway racing.
Yeah, no, it's a great point because, you know, actually I had my focus mainly on you, especially. Take us through sort of that wreck. I mean, you just got sort of caught up, and there was a couple of wrecks that day, including within the last 9 laps of that race, but you just sort of got caught up that day, and that's, I guess, sometimes what happens in racing. And can you also speak to maybe how frustrating that was for you?
Yeah, I mean, we had the wreck that we were in. We had it missed, and then the guy behind us just didn't check up in time and kind of pushed us right into the wreck and ended our day. So you definitely don't want to start out the season behind the eight ball, and that's what happened. So we still have to, you know, we're still kind of catch up from that.
Yeah.
And it's just, like I said, part of it.
Yeah, no question about it. How is it driving that Camaro ZL1, man? I mean, that car is dope.
Yeah, no, it's super nice. You know, I feel like Chevy's behind a little bit from the other manufacturers, but it's still an honor to be able to drive for Chevrolet and drive the 43. So we're, trying to make the most of what we got. We're doing a lot with a little.
Your thoughts, I know obviously we're sort of early a little bit into the race season, and we talked a little bit about the Daytona 500, but I want to get your thoughts on how you think the season is going to this point.
It's going okay at best. You know, obviously we want to be running better and have better finishes, but we also understand that the circumstances that we're in, you know, we can only do so much. So as long as we're checking everything off the checklist, and I can lay down and lay my head down at night knowing that I gave it everything that I had, then okay, and that's it. So then we'll move on to the next weekend and try to do better.
That the voice of Bubba Wallace. He drives the number 43 for Richard Petty Racing. Check him out this Sunday, the Bristol Motor Speedway, the Food City 500. You can view that 2 p.m. Eastern on FS1. He joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Now, Bubba, that you've had a year under your belt, speak to this being your second year and sort of I'm not going to say being used to, but sort of knowing the ropes, if you will, having had a full season under your belt.
Yeah, it definitely helps out. You know, you got to learn a lot last year and how the Cup schedule works and how the Cup Series drivers are. And, you know, now that you're in it for the second time, it's there's a lot of things that you can remember and certain tracks to go to and work on, and now you're not showing up for the first time and having the rookie stripes and going through all that stuff. So you definitely obviously want to do better than what you did last year just because you know so much more. So it's always, you're always learning each and every race, no matter how many years you're in it.
What is it like driving for the King?
It's an honor. You know, it's special. Everybody knows who the King is. Obviously, it's either Elvis Presley or Richard Petty. And so driving for Richard Petty, the King, is incredible. It's been a lot of fun. It's been frustrating at times, for sure, but we've all been frustrated. So he understands, you know, the position that we're in, and he just comes to me every day and each and every weekend is telling me to drive the hardest that I can, try to make up for what we're lacking. And so I take that and I try to do my best.
No question about it. You know, this time last year at Bristol, you finished in 16th place. Talk about Bristol and maybe some of it's a short track, so some of the challenges that the track presents.
Yeah, that was probably our best race last year. You know, despite the finish, we had a tire come apart the last 100 laps or so, and that's what, you know, regulated us back to 16th. So that was unfortunate, but we went up and, you know, took the lead and led our first laps in the Cup Series. So that was nice. That was really cool. That was pretty special. That was definitely a highlight of my career, to be able to do that. So hopefully we can go back and be just as good. And, you know, the second race at Bristol in August, we didn't even get to make a lap before we were wrecked. So that was unfortunate. But Bristol's always a fun track and always provides exciting racing for the fans, and it turns out to be a good race for us.
Again, Bubba Wallace joins us here on the program, drives the number 43 for Richard Petty Race. I know we've talked about this with you many a time, but, you know, for those that aren't familiar, of course, you were able to win a series back in 2013 at Martinsville and becoming the first African-American to do so, to win a NASCAR event since 1963. What did that mean to you?
It meant a lot. That was a huge win for us, and that was like a staple point in our in my career and in my journey. So that was an incredible feat, and then knowing that the history behind it since Wendell Scott was pretty special. I didn't know that going into it, and that's kind of how I like to carry out my career, is just go out and do the job on the track and let everything else settle in place after.
Sure. Let me ask you this, because I brought to the Daytona 500. I brought my wife with me, so she's like, "Well, who should I cheer for?" And you know, you weren't at the car at the time, but you know, prior to the race, we were taking pictures at the car and all that kind of stuff. But the thing about it, you know, a lot of the African American folks that were there were, you know, wanted to get a glimpse of you and wanted to get a glimpse of the car, and you being one of the few drivers of color that are on the series. So what does that sort of mean to you when you have people that generally don't watch the race really gravitate to you?
Yeah, no, that's cool. You know, very honored to, you know, just be here in the spotlight and making the most of what I can, and just a small kid from, you know, born in Alabama but grew up in Concord, was, you know, never had dreams of being at this level. So for people to want to reach out and you know, see me in person just means a lot. It's very humbling. So, you know, my mom's always there to never let me forget where I came from. So that's, you know, that's been her MO from day one, is never forget and always stay humble. And that's the biggest thing I work on.
And then lastly, Bubba, we appreciate the time. What is it going to take to win at Bristol this Sunday?
You got to have the right setup. That's for sure. Getting around there, you know, with the new aero package that we got. You gotta be on your game. That's a track where mental toughness, it's gotta stay strong, just because the race is so long and it's a lot of close quarters races. People are gonna get into you, people are gonna hold you up, and you're gonna get frustrated, but you gotta forgive and forget and set yourself up for the end of the race. So it's a fun track, but it can be frustrating at times. So we'll show up hopefully with something close to the same package we had in the first race there last year, and see what we can do.
Bubba Wallace drives the number 43 for Richard Petty Racing. Check him out this Sunday, the Ford City 500 at Bristol Motor Speedway, 2 p.m. Eastern on FS1. As Bubba Wallace joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Bubba, again, great to catch up with you. Continued success to you and your team this season.
All right, thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
You got it, Bubba. Bubba Wallace joining us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. And I tell you what, it should be a really fun race in Bristol on Sunday. Couple of things I want to touch on still to come here, actually, on From the Press Box to Press Row. Model Danielle Harrington, she of course graced the cover of Sports Illustrated's swimsuit edition on last year. She's going to be in the edition on this year as well. She's going to join us on the program a little bit later on in the program. Joining us, the Glove Naismith Hall of Famer Gary Payton going to join us on the program. On Thursday, it was announced, as a matter of fact, go back earlier in the week, it was announced that the University of North Carolina had suspended all of its women's basketball coaches, including Sylvia Hatchell, the head coach. And then allegations came out on Thursday that not only did Sylvia Hatchell require that players play injured, but also that she was accused of using racial epithets to the point. I want to point it out specifically what was quoted in the Washington Post as her saying, quote, hanged from trees with nooses, if they're performing, in essence, if they, end quote, if their performance didn't improve. And so, you know, these are allegations that are made by some of the parents of some of the now former student athletes. There have been quite a few student athletes that have transferred out of the program. And, you know, I mean, I gotta be honest. When I saw this, it came up on my phone on Thursday evening because the suspensions, and I was wondering, well, I wonder what had happened. But when those allegations came forth on Thursday, I was very disappointed, to be quite honest with you. I mean, listen, you know, and again, there are allegations at this point. Her attorney tried to come out and clarify and said it. She didn't say exactly that. She made another reference. But I mean, again, you have quite a few of these student athletes that have come forward. The parents have come forward. I mean, I don't think everybody can have not heard correctly what was said. I just think it's a very, very unfortunate situation. And, you know, at the University of North Carolina, for those that don't even may not know, you have the whole Silent Sam situation. I mean, you just got a lot of history with a lot of these schools, and all of that stuff starts to kind of come up. It starts to fester. And then you have this situation with a Hall of Fame coach being accused of making racially insensitive remarks. I mean, it's just very, very, I mean, I was extremely disappointed, and it was very, very unfortunate. On a positive note in the local area, congratulations to the Carolina Hurricanes, who have made the playoffs. It had been since 2008-2009 season since the Hurricanes made the playoffs. I think we talked about this from time to time here on the program. Of course, back in May, we had Rod Brindamore, former Carolina Hurricane player, now the head coach, on the program. Talked with him about this very thing, and it has come to fruition that the Carolina Hurricanes are going to the playoffs. And believe me, I'm going to be in PNC game three. Whoever they're going to play, I'm going to be right there, front and center. Up next, model Danielle Harrington. Let's continue here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Of course, the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition comes out in May. And one of the stars of the Swimsuit Edition, as a matter of fact, she was front and center on last year, was on the front cover. She is Danielle Harrington, and she joins us right now here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Danielle, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you. And in fact, you made history last year by becoming just the third Black woman to grace the front cover of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. What does that, or did that, mean for you or to you?
It means everything. I mean, it means that there is, you know, a change in the industry and diversity as far as, you know, color and, you know, race, and even as far as body type. So, I mean, it means so much. It means so much. And I'm just so happy that, you know, it was me, and I'm just happy to represent, basically.
No question about it, because the other two women, Black women, that in fact graced the cover were Beyonce and then, of course, Tyra Banks, who you have looked up to in this modeling industry.
Absolutely. And just to be in that category with them is just beyond. It means so much to me. And then I look up to both of them, Beyonce and Tyra Banks. Their work ethic is insane. So, you know, that's what I plan on doing, and just working hard and, you know, inspiring the next generation to come.
Sure. Have you been able to work with either of them to this point in your career?
No, not yet. I met Tyra, obviously, but I haven't actually worked with them. But to be a part of, in the same category as them, is, you know, that's enough for me right now.
No question about it. So, you know, having met her, what was that like? Because, again, and just reading some information about you, what, and I know you're, you know, you, again, you looked up to her and do look up to her. So what was that like? Take us through that first meeting with your idol, Tyra Banks.
Okay, so
you say, when you say okay, that means there's a story here, right? A good one,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, so she revealed the cover to me. So that's how I found out. Basically, Sports Illustrated set up a fake photo shoot that she was having and basically made it seem like I came in and kind of crashed her shoot. And so I was with the editor, MJ, and she was like, oh, my God. Tyra Banks was like, oh, my God, MJ, what are you doing here? And I'm just, like, behind MJ, like, oh, my God, this is Tyra Banks. This is not how I want to meet Tyra Banks. Oh, my goodness. And so we walk in, and I'm just, like, MJ, the editor, she's, like, pulling me towards Tyra. And I'm just, like, slowly, like, walking towards her. She's like, oh, my God, I know you. And then she goes, I have this special project I'm working on. Since you're here, I would love to show you, but you can't tell anyone. And I'm like, of course, Tyra, I would never tell a soul. Like, I won't say anything. And so she brings out this big poster board, and then she looks at me, and she's like, I have one photo in my hand. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I started getting really nervous. Like, my knees started shaking. And then... And then she's like, there's only been two other black women on the cover. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I just started crying. And then she turned it around, and it was me on the cover. And, like, to meet her and to have her give me so much great advice as far as, like, having a good accountant, a good lawyer, and, like, you know, as far as business-wise, it meant so much to me.
That
to have her really pull me aside and, yeah.
That is an awesome, I had no idea in doing some of the reading to prepare for this. I had no idea. That is an awesome story. We are joined by model Danielle Harrington here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Of course, in 2018, she graced the front cover of Sports Illustrated, the swimsuit edition. What can, and of course your first, so take us back, your first year in terms of shooting for Sports Illustrated was 2017. So this, when this issue comes out in May, it's going to make your third consecutive year as part of Sports Illustrated's swimsuit edition. What was that 2017 shoot like for you?
Oh my God. So I was so nervous, but I was so excited because I had only been in New York. I moved from Compton to New York, and I had only been in New York 6 months when I confirmed the shoot. And so, I mean, I was like, that's like my first big job, like first basically everything, like my debut into like basically the industry. So it was, I was so nervous. And I mean, it's no way you can actually really prepare, because when you're on set, they're like, okay, go, like, and I'm just like, oh my God, I was so nervous. But luckily the team is just so amazing. Yutai shot me, and he just made me feel so comfortable and just so, like, you know, like I was meant to be here. So I felt really empowered. I was really nervous, but, like, maybe within the hour, I was, you know, comfortable and just, you know, kind of in my own skin. So it was really nice.
Yeah. Speaking a little bit of skin, and I want to talk with you about your comfort level and how not only the comfort level is growing, but in terms that I would equate it also to a confidence level and having confidence, because I guess more recently you posted on Instagram you were doing, I guess, a walkway deal in a leopard suit. Talk about, I mean, yeah. Now you were super confident doing that walk.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, I mean, starting off in the industry, I was never, like, really that thin. So I never actually could even do runway or, you know, do certain things like that as far as, like, fashion goes, because I'm too curvy, I have too much booze or too much booty or whatever the case was. So I think starting off with Sports Illustrated and have that, like, you know, I felt like I belonged there, and I felt like I, you know, was a part of something that, you know, was just such a good message. And just, you know, to be comfortable as women, we should be comfortable in our own skin. We shouldn't have people feel like people are judging us because of the shape of our bodies or just, you know. So yeah. I think being with Sports Illustrated has, you know, it just made me even more confident in my skin. And, you know, I want to be a advocate for that, because I think all bodies are beautiful and, you know, people should be comfortable with that. So I posted it because of that. Because I want people to show people, yes, like, it's okay to be curvy and be on the runway. And I felt so empowered. And thanks to Laquan Smith, like, he wanted me to really be, like, powerful and strong. So, and I really felt that during that show. And I'm happy that I could post it and people can see that confidence.
Absolutely. Model Danielle Harrington joins us here on the program. You can follow her on Instagram at Danielle_Harrington_. Of course, she's going to be part of the 2019 Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, which is coming out in May. Let me take you back a little bit. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, your first major shoot was for GQ back in 2016. Speak to that and, you know, sort of that being your first major shoot, which has now led to all of these other things that have happened for you.
It was fun. I mean, I had such a good time. We shot with, he's like a Latin singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's Dominican. And, yeah, I shot with him and it was really fun. It was actually pretty quick, too. And I shot with Ben Watts, who actually shot my cover.
Okay.
Of Sports Illustrated. So that was really fun.
You know, interestingly enough, you mentioned it and you did grow up in Compton. The one thing, you know, I'm of a certain age. So the one thing that I know about Compton, which isn't much, but, you know, when you're talking about like NWA and King T and all of these rappers that are from there, I mean, I was a huge fan of a lot of those NWA and King T and DJ Quick and so on and so forth. But what was it like growing up in Compton?
It was fun. I mean, I felt like I had a regular childhood. I mean, obviously you don't go down certain streets or don't stay out late or mm-hmm. like, you know, don't hang out on the corner of a certain store or certain things like that. But for the most part, I think my mom and my family tried to make it as normal as possible for us. So, I mean, at my grandma's house, we used to go there after school every day. We had a swimming pool, like literally all the, like, I mean, it wasn't, I mean, I know that it has Compton gets a bad rep, but I think I didn't grow up like in any way as far as like gang violence mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Obviously I hear about it and stuff like that. And it's just like, you have to kind of be safe. So we couldn't stay outside past, you know, when the streetlights came on, we had to go in, but stuff like that. So it just, and then also on my grandma's street, like the whole family, I mean, the whole street, like kind of knew us. So, I mean, it was, I feel like it was pretty normal.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple more thoughts, Dad.
But obviously
you
know, certain streets or certain gangs that you don't kind of mess with or go down or whatever, but it wasn't that.
Yeah. No, a couple more thoughts, Danielle, and we appreciate the time. Now, I was reading that if you weren't modeling, you would be, what, a psychologist? Did you go to college for a brief time or anything like that?
Yes, I went to community college, and I was done, and I was about to transfer. And then I kind of, you know, got really serious about modeling and did that full time.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I did community college, so I have my associate.
Nice.
And psychology, and yeah, that's what I would want to do, like more like children's psychology, because I just think it's really cool how the brain works and like how different experiences could make you think a certain way or act a certain way, and like, you know, like traumatic events could, like, you know, kind of change your brain, you know, or stuff like that. I think it's really cool.
Sure. Do you foresee yourself going back to school to get that degree?
I would love to. What, so, now, yeah, in the future, for sure.
Sure. What school, now, were you set to transfer to a school?
No. Okay. Well, not exactly, but I was probably going to go to probably Long Beach State because I was just, like, the closest to my house.
Sure.
And when I was living in Compton. But probably now that I'm living in New York, probably NYU or, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. No, very good. So now you're a huge Kobe Bryant fan.
I love Kobe.
Have you met him?
Lakers. I've never met him. Never. I've never met him. Lakers all day.
So what do you think? Like, what do you think right now? There's, you know, it's just not going well. I think everybody thought LeBron would come in and it would be back to how the Lakers used to be. But
yes,
this season just didn't happen that way so far, Danielle.
It did not. It did not happen. I mean, I don't really know what to say to him. I can't, I mean, honestly, I don't know. To be very honest, I don't know. But I mean, who knows, maybe next year.
Yeah, you know, he may get a couple of folks. Lastly,
yeah,
and
we're gotta warm up.
Yeah, they need look. They need to do something. They have to. Danielle, it's a mess in Los Angeles with the Lakers.
I know, but I still have faith in them. I'm gonna keep a positive attitude. They can get it together. They can turn it around.
Yeah. No, very good. Lastly, and I know. So now, do you have some business ventures that you have happening right now with the success you're having? And sort of what's next for you?
Honestly, I kind of want to do everything. So I want to get into like more television stuff. So as far as like acting and hosting and stuff like that.
Awesome. Check her out in the next edition of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. It is coming out in May. Also follow her on Instagram at Danielle_Harrington_. She is Danielle Harrington. She joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Danielle, we appreciate the time. Continued success in all you do.
Thank you so much.
Danielle Harrington making history and going to be featured in Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition coming out next month. Up next, Basketball Hall of Famer Gary Payton.
BoxToRow.com is the website for all of your HBCU sports needs. From the Game of the Week feature to interviews to the latest news in the world of HBCU sports, BoxToRow.com has you covered. Missed a week of From the Press Box to Press Row? BoxToRow.com has all the archive shows. Don't forget to check out the All-American teams and weekly media coaches bowls. From the Press Box to Press Row and BoxToRow.com, your HBCU sports leader. It's Donald Ware, From the Press Box to Press Row.
Let's continue here on From the Press Box to Press Row. It is, in fact, Final Four weekend, and got a gentleman on the line who knows a lot about the NCAA tournament, also knows a lot about professional basketball, more specifically the NBA. 17 years in the NBA, 9-time All-Star, 9-time NBA All-Defense First Team, 2006 NBA champion, and he was a trash talker when he was in the league, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that as it relates to the 3x3U tournament. Gary Payton joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Gary, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So the Dos Equis 3x3U, but I want to start here because part of this, you get points and so forth and maybe bonuses and stuff like that as it relates to trash talking. But first, describe for us, what exactly is 3x3U?
3XU or 3U is a basketball tournament. It's a national basketball tournament. Really, is put on by Dos Equis that give Division I basketball players that's just now coming out an opportunity to win money. This is the first time they're going to be eligible to win money. They're going to win prizes. They're going to do a lot of things, and it's going to be great because, you know, basically the champion is going to win $100,000. The team that runner-up win $2,000. That's a big leap. And with a 48-pole pool game, play games, you know what I'm saying? Then what's so good about it is that whoever talks the best trash is going to win like the MVP. You know what I'm saying? So that's what's going to be so cracking about it. So it's going to be really great. And with Dos Equis putting this together, man, it's a tournament that consists of 32 four-man teams, you know, and it's going to be really, really great. And everybody's got to get out, man. You know, they're going to play half court. They got a 12-second shot clock. It's 1 point per basket, you know. Then you get 2 points for the three-point arc. And then, you know, the first team to 21 wins the game. And then, or if you don't score 21 at the 10 minutes, whoever leads them don't win the basketball game.
Man, that's awesome. What kind of, Gary, what kind of trash talk are you looking for in this?
Man, I'm looking for everything, you know, but we don't want to take it to another level, you know what I'm saying? You can't take it to another level where they want to get into a lot of fighting. I want to hear some interesting stuff, you know, going out on people, and then when you bag it up, you make a bucket, you can talk trash, and you can go at it, and do two players go at it, and they go back and forth and give the fans interesting, you know, quality basketball. That's what I want, you know? know, I don't want it to go too far. I want it to be right there where they talk trash. The other person can take it and this person can take it, but make it fun and make the fans get involved with it.
Have you talked during your playing days? Did anybody ever provoke, I'm sure, but did anybody ever provoke you? Or did you provoke someone during your playing days?
I always did this, that, you know, that was my thing, provoking people. You know, you have to have tough skin, because when you start to provoke people, what do? They pay attention more to you and get away from their concept of their team game. And then it's all about you, and then they don't think about everybody else around them and try to win the basketball game, and you have accomplished what you wanted to. You got them out of their game. You got them out of what you wanted them to do, and now it's a big thing that you probably most likely going to win the basketball game.
Yep. That's the voice of Gary Payton, as a matter of fact. Also, Naismith Hall of Famer, 17 years in the National Basketball Association. He joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row, the Dos Equis 3X3U tournament taking place this weekend in Minneapolis. So, Gary, talk about your days at Oregon State, man. You led Oregon State 3 years to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I sure did. You know, my first year, I thought we were going to do it too, and we went to the NIT. You know, we had a bad second part of the half, but going to the NCAA tournament all 3 years and winning 20-plus games was really, really great for me. You know, I went to a program that wasn't that good. I had a great coach and Coach Ralph Miller, and we just put a team together and played defense and did a lot of things. I'm very, very fortunate to be part of the NCAA tournament for 3 years in a row and get there and experience it. And so, you know, it was a great ride. And when you go to the NCAA tournament and get to these type of levels, man, you got to enjoy it because you don't know if you're ever going to get there.
Yeah. You know, over the years, we most notably, we had Too Short on this program. I want to know from you, what's the basketball culture? What was it like growing up in Oakland, coming up playing ball?
Well, it was great because what we had is, you know, we had players that would go to different neighborhoods and different playgrounds and compete. You know, we brought the Brian Shaws, we brought the J.R. Riders, we brought the Jason Kidds, we brought the Antonio Davises, the Greg Fosters, myself. But we looked at Bill Russell, we looked at Paul Silas and all them guys before us that was in Oakland. You know, we even had Bill Cartwright right down the street at Elk Grove down the street. We went across and seen Quentin Davis play at USF. We had a lot of basketball players that came out of this Bay Area and during this time. And Too Short was one of the rappers that grew up watching, you know what I'm saying? And then he making the music and making it big for us. And we were just a hungry neighborhood type kids that wanted to make it out of Oakland, California, because what the things were going on in Oakland that we wanted to get out of here. And that's what we did. We just played hard basketball, played hard, and then we brought our street game to college and to the NBA. And then everybody started understanding that we have point guards that can come out of here, and we have some pretty good ones.
Yeah, any thought? I know it's not I know obviously it's not the same thing. You know, Oakland is not the same thing as LA. I get it. But I mean, to the point about growing up, you know, in a tougher environment. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, the whole Nipsey Hussle situation?
Well, you know what? LA is, like you said, is more broader, and Oakland is one of these things where, you know, it's smaller. And I think Nipsey was doing a great job of trying to be a mentor, and he grew up in that neighborhood the same way we do. Yep. And we have people who are not, you know, that smart. You know, you get into it nowadays when you get into it with people want to run and get a pistol. They want to go get a gun. In my era, we would fight, and then we'll leave it alone if an argument or something picks up. And we lost a great man. We lost a great guy, you know. I just seen him at the All-Star game and things like that. And it's over something silly and unnecessary, you know what I'm saying, over an argument or whatever it was. You know, I think he lost his life for no reason, and that's just a shame to me.
The Dos Equis 3X3U taking place this weekend in Minneapolis. We're joined by the one and only Gary Payton here on the program. A couple of more thoughts, Gary. We appreciate the time. We had a former teammate of yours on this program about a couple of months ago, Nate McMillan. What do you remember most about those days with the Seattle Supersonics. Your 17-year career, you spent 13 years in Seattle.
Well, being in Seattle, we're going to go with Nate, first of all. He had the point guard starting job, and then in 1990, they wanted to choose a kid from Oakland, California, coming out of Oregon State, and they wanted to take me with the second pick. That's hard for a point guard to know that a team wants to draft at your position and get a better player because they're trying to say that we needed help at that position. And for him to open his arms up to me and help me like a big brother was really, really big, and we became as one. He became my big brother. You know, he was one of the best men in my wedding, and you know, it's just crazy. And when we went to Seattle, and all of a sudden George Karl comes, and we start making and building a team with Sean, myself, Detlef, Nate, Hershey Hawkins, Sam Perkins. All those guys, we start doing it, and we start winning 60 games. I think we did that like four or five times in a row. We won 60 ball games plus, and you know, making it to the finals in 1996. And I think if we wouldn't have broke that team up so early, we could have had a good chance of going back a couple of times. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. But I had a great time in Seattle. Seattle is one of the greatest cities ever. That's like second home to me, and it's always going to be that way. And, you know, I love them fans, and I'm trying to get them basketball back up there. And my kids were born in Seattle, so being in Seattle was one of the greatest things ever. I couldn't imagine going anywhere else and getting drafted anywhere else, going into the pros and spending 13 great years there.
Awesome. Lastly, what was it like? I mean, it was a great era of basketball, man, in the 90s. And of course, you ultimately won an NBA championship in 2006 in Miami, a great contributor to that team. What was it like playing? And you were one of the best defenders and one of the best of all time. What was it like playing against Mike or against MJ?
It was real fun. You know, I always look forward to playing against him because he was the competition. Everybody was talking about Michael Jordan. And I took it to a point where I felt like I can guard him anytime I go I wanted to, and then I can go back at him. And, you know, I wasn't scared. I didn't fear him. But it was fun because he was a competitor, a great competitor. And you always want to play against the best because if you think you're the best, you want to play. It's always going to be somebody a little bit better than you or better than you. And you want to play against them guys and make sure that you can see if your skill level is there and what you have to do. And I look forward to it. I only can play two times a year because we went there and they came to our place. And then when I got a chance to play him in six games in the finals, when I didn't start playing him until really the fourth game. It was a big, big thing for me and having fun and doing it the way I did it. So I had a great time playing against him.
I'm sorry, I said lastly, but who do you got in the Final Four this weekend?
Well, I like the Texas Tech team. Okay. They're going to be good. Them and Auburn are the two teams that I think is really made a stride. Everybody didn't think that they were going to be there. And, you know, the Michigan State team, I always thought that they were going to be a team that's really, really, you know, was supposed to be a number one seed. But if I had to pick any one of them, I would think Texas Tech is going to be right there.
Yeah. He is behind Dos Equis, 3X, 3U. A lot of trash talk going to be happening this weekend at the 3X, 3U tournament. Of course, NBA, or I should say Naismith Hall of Famer, Gary Payton, played 17 years in the NBA, joins us here on From the Press Box to Press Row. Gary, great to catch up with you, man, and we look forward to this 3X, 3U tournament.
Oh, you guys get out there and go see it because these guys going to do it hard. They're going to play hard. They're trying to win money. And, you know, 303 Basketball is live in effect right now. So get out there and go check them out.
Appreciate it, Gary. I got to get out of here. Programming note, next week, superstar actress Taraji P. Henson going to join us. Also, professional golfer and history maker Lee Elder going to join us as well. Thank you to Danielle Harrington, Gary Payton, Bubba Wallace, Joey Logano for joining us today here on From the Press Box to Press Row. And always remember to support those that support you. From the Press Box to Press Row is presented by DW Communications.
Let it rain. Help me, somebody say it tonight. Oh.